two village idiots with a love-hate relationship.
See, you got fat.
See, you still look like a 15-year-old girl, but not hot.
Who can't stop arguing over Oklahoma sports.
You know what, man? Why am I still talking to you?
Come on, we were doing good there, man.
It's the Just Okay Sports Podcast.
Sooner Nation, Thunder Nation, we are back. This is the Just Okay Sports Podcast. It's Just Oklahoma Sports Podcast. I'm one of your village aides, Daryl. I'm here with my brother, Jared. If for some reason you would actually enjoy listening to this podcast, which is probably not going to be fun, then please like, subscribe, follow, and do all the different things and give us a little love. As I stated on Twitter the other day, do we have tons of inside information? Rarely, but sometimes. Are we some kind of college football All-Americans? No, we played some high school football. That's it. We're not journalists or anything else. We are just guys giving our opinion, our thoughts, and we try to do the best job we can to go through and analyze the game. So,
hey, content's free for all time.
Content's free. There is no paywall. There is no nothing. We're
not going to change this, and we won't change this in a week. So don't worry.
No. Wow. We're not going to change it. Now, look, we have merch you can buy. You can do super chats with us when we do live, you know, YouTubes, all that kind of stuff. But look, at the end of the day, we're just trying to share content and have a great time talking about it. So that's that. Jared, I don't really want to do the how was your day, how was my day. We kind of did that off camera. Yeah, I will say this. The church I pastor now is about 60% OSU people. So was not looking forward to going to church, but I will say two great things came out of it. One, people were more than cordial in their trash talk, if that makes sense. And the other thing that was awesome, that was really genuine, was I said, well, I get it. They go, well, one of them said, I can't wait till we play Bedlam again. I was like, there's no way this generation of OSU fans is going to let that happen. Cause they're just going to let it ride out that, they won the last one and he goes, the people that say that are idiots. Like, and just started at about six more. And I was like, okay. I was like, okay, all right.
So let me say this. I got to give a shout out to my boy Brady. And I do this a lot. Brady is like a brother to me. You know, I actually like him. So, you know, he's got that going for him. But he's an OSU guy. And he actually texted me. So I think I talked about this before on the preview pod. Him and I have a rule that we have 10 minutes to trash talk before and after the game. That way there's no massive piling on. And before the game, he called me. He was at the stadium. He went to the game all dressed up, cowboy hat, the whole spiel.
Oh, I'm sure.
And was, talked trash. And it was kind of funny because I will say the trash talk was really funny. He said, Ollie Gordon's going to run for 300 yards, and he goes. And I go, you know what? I hope you do. I hope you lose. But I said, I hope he does, and I hope he goes and wins the Heisman, so it'll take you guys 40 years to build him a statue. But we had a little talk, and he goes, you know what? He goes, I'm going to be honest with you. He goes, this doesn't count towards my time with trash talk. He goes, I hope we get to play again. And I hope the series gets a continuous amount. And it was funny because one of his friends was in the background. He's like, stop lying. And I was like, yeah, I think honestly, I think there's a lot more of them. From the people I've talked to, a lot of them want it to continue. But as a matter of fact, so I wouldn't say that's an inside source. I know somebody that's family is well connected, I guess, to OSU. Right. And I've heard that it's more the administration doesn't want to do that more than it's the fan base.
People I know that are fans, both sides want to see it continue. It's just a lot of people hurt and money and it's all that stuff. So, Well, let's start talking to this game. 27-24, Oklahoma State wins on their home field. They tear down the goalpost. They get to their 20th win in 120 years. But look, I guess I would just start here. This is a game that OU could, and I think there's ways that you can even say should have won. I still don't believe, and I've kind of said this the last couple of weeks, I still don't believe that this Oklahoma team is so talented that it can just walk out there and beat teams that are less talented, right? Yes, I do believe that Oklahoma has more talent than Oklahoma State. I don't think the gap is some kind of,
it's not a Grand Canyon of difference anymore. No.
Right. And so therefore you have to play clean football to win, right? Like when you get to be like Georgia and Alabama, then you can walk in and play a really crappy game and still walk out with a 14-point win. OU did not play clean on Saturday. And I think we had some injuries that made that gap even less on the day. And I think we were playing with some guys that were banged up as well.
Let's do this. Let's do this. Let's come at it from this way. Because for people that don't know, we usually have a flow.
Yeah,
Daryl and I usually follow the flow. Don Troy is another story. Love you,
Troy. Troy likes to destroy the flow. That is his whole.
So I'm going to be the opposite. I'm going to destroy us not having flow by impromptu making a flow as we pod. give me one positive and one negative from the game. Like give me a sunshine and give me your dark doom. Give me that.
Let me start with the dark. Oh man, what was the biggest? I mean, I think I'm going to come back to the same thing that I've been saying for several years, and that is something about the offensive line room has to change. I mean, that's the area that it makes no sense. Now, look, let me be more specific. The negative that I came out with that is this: either the evaluation process or the recruiting efforts of Bill Beedenbow are not good enough. And a lot of people are going to roast me and go, well, look at what's coming in. Okay, let's look at what's coming in. You went to England and got a kid that's not necessarily an upper echelon across the board of American football players. He's got some tools.
He's a project.
But he's a project, right? You went and got, you've got Iasosa, right, coming in, who, again, project, right? Good kid, works hard. I've watched him play in person. He can play at college, but this isn't a guy that's going to come in and plug and play and just dominate people. You're going to have some things work out for him to be a dominant player, especially in the SEC. And who else do we like? And then we're just hoping and praying that Bricks and Eddie Pierre Louis jump in this class, right? Now, last class, not bad. But let's be real. Of all the guys you brought in, Caden Green's the only one that you've even felt capable of playing some backup snaps. Everybody else has not touched the field at all. And this is like, you know what, the fourth, fifth year that we're rolling guys out there. And look, it's not that they don't play hard. It's not that Bill Beedenbow doesn't develop them, but the reality is when you look at their arms, when you look at their hips, when you look at all the things you look at for alignment of what makes them great, the ceiling is very low. It is a very, very low ceiling. And so then your margin of error is nothing, and it has to change. Like when we really think about this team from the start of the season till now, the one thing we come back to as a unit is not good enough. It's the offensive line. Over and over and over and over again. So that's my biggest negative coming out of the game. My biggest positive is the youth movement. Like let's process for a minute that maybe the best defender on that field Saturday was Kip Lewis, true sophomore. Hey, let's process.
Even though you just told a whole lie on Twitter, by the way, I just saw that.
I said no cap.
Oh, okay. You said no cap. Okay. I just saw the blue cap and I was like, I thought you were saying
I said cap. No cap.
Okay. God. My bad. I just saw the blue cap. But yeah, Kip Lewis bought the stock.
Yes. And by the way, I bought the stock on Kobe McKenzie and he's another bright spot on the day. Yep. He was the second leading tackler and he came in, what, two or three series into the game after Canik kind of struggled a little bit and got going. I think we all think Peyton Bowen's a superstar, right? So you have that. Even on offense, Sawchuk had a really good day. Nick Anderson, really good day. Caden Green, pretty good day. So when you look at the classes that Brent Venables has brought in, there's a different level of talent in that. And that's my biggest positive on the, you know, coming out of that game. It's more big picture stuff than kind of honed in detail stuff. So that's my darkness. That's my sunshine right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. Let me give you my dark. Because I actually, man, this is going to taste terrible coming out of my mouth. I agree with you, honestly. I don't know how to feel about Coach B. I'm not on the fire Coach B train yet. But the playing rain, as much as he has really just got me scratching my head. And the fact that you haven't sniffed playing anybody else. Yeah. You pulled everybody else when they made a mistake. Even like when you go back and watch, it's like, I'm not saying that people didn't make mistakes. Caden Green made mistakes, right?
Right.
Caden Green didn't play a perfect game. Or even Guyton or whoever, right? Like whatever, any other player on the offensive line, literally anybody on that offensive line has pretty much gotten pulled because they made a mistake. And yeah. Rame had an egregious game this game. And what's funny is it's really, we're seeing the same things. And if you watch the film, I don't know what part of you putting on that film makes you think that he's an offensive lineman that should be playing at a high level of D1 football, to be honest. Not with the effort he gives. And part of me, this is where I'm trying to figure it out. And I'm not trying to come up with defenses for Coach B, because I'm on the thing of it all comes back to him. But is Rame the issue that's causing, is it dragging? I know everybody says, like, we've had centers in the past, that have elevated the line, offensive line play.
Yeah.
Well, I think you can have somebody elevate the offensive line. Like Creed Humphrey is the obvious. We'll use him, mm-hmm. right? He elevated the guys around him.
Yep.
But I would say you can drag down the guys around you just as much, right? Now, McCain Matower is limited on what he can do. I don't think any center is going to elevate him to the point that he's going to be, they're going to be looking at him as a Joe Moore Award type of offensive lineman or whatever, right? But at the same time, it's like Rame just doesn't have a physicality. He runs when they run the ball and he should be getting to the second level, he just jogs. He doesn't care to go find somebody and headhunt on a run play. A lot of time when he gets beat, he just kind of stands there. He's like, well, a guy got past me. I'm sorry. And it's just, again, circling back to it. How have we not put Everett in there? How have we not put anybody out there? Right. I understand, but it's like we're deep in the season and nobody else has even sniffed the field at center.
Right.
And like I said, Rame, I'm going to say it and everybody can get mad at me. This loss isn't on Jeff Lebby, in my opinion. A huge, huge part of this game is on Rame. And everybody can say, well, you weren't that close. I'm like, look, the ball was moving. We were moving the ball on both drives that Rame completely just
snaps the ball. Nothingness. Yeah.
And this is not, and people could say, well, it was loud state. This has happened. What? That's like, I think the fourth or fifth time. Those were the fourth and fifth times, I think, this season that he's done something like that.
Oh, and he was, and let's not forget last year, just general snaps.
Yeah.
Remember the number of snaps that DG is like having to go get the ball because it doesn't get to him, or it's a fastball at 100 miles an hour right to his face and he's having to try to juggle it. Like, there were snap issues all through the season last year.
Well, and you have to take it into account that he's, what, a 3-4 year starter at this point? I think 3 years.
Yes.
Starter. This is third year.
Yeah, three.
Like, if
yeah.
this is a first or second year center, okay, you take that lump. Right, you take that hit. At this point, it's like if somebody's invested, as somebody who complained and almost like left the team because he was having to split snaps in the spring, bro, I could see why you were splitting snaps. Put the film on, dude.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like, Rame's the guy that I've circled as my, if you want to pick a scapegoat, pick Rame. That's why the offense faltered. There's a number of plays that I watched where he just literally, like, there's literally a play, and I couldn't remember if it was Towie or Sawchuk, where they're basically running, like, he needs to get to the second level. And if he pancakes a linebacker, that may be a touchdown. And you know what he's doing? Jogging. But barely. I don't even know if you want to call it a jog. It's an offensive lineman jog. Like, dude doesn't care to be there. The guy doesn't care to be there. I'm sorry. He's going through the motions.
Yeah. And we highlighted that early in the season, right? When we did do tape breakdown of Rain, you know, they, you know, for those that do or don't know offensive line play, and look, I'm not going to sit here and try to pretend like I know it well, but there are these combo blocks where you double a guy for a certain point of time to get him into a position, and then you roll off and you raise to the next level, right, to go get somebody. And Rame just standing around, like not looking to go, or guys breaking runs. And again, hey, I've done my thing.
The only defense I have is that he seems knowledgeable. Like, I see him making pre-snap callouts and stuff or whatever.
Right.
Great. But you should have somebody else to be able to come. We've seen that. And like, people be like, well, you can't replace your center in the middle of the game. Yes, you can. We've done it.
Yeah, you can.
We've seen
Texas did it and almost beat us.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a foreign concept. Like, to me, it's like, you've got to go to Coach B and go, do we just not have anybody? Nobody?
Yeah.
Like, right. Like, you can't look at every other offensive lineman and do that and say, well, he's just trying to get them to where, like, you know, put that dog back in them and give them, like, I want to get back out there and smash somebody, and not do that with your center. I'm sorry. So that's my question. I don't know if it's a Coach B thing. I don't know if it's a Rame holding the only thing that I've been able to come up with is Rame is basically holding them hostage because he says, if you basically bench me, I'm not going to play. I'll leave or quit or whatever. And they know that they may only have one guy. You know, maybe it is only Everett is the only one that's been able to really be a guy that could fill in at center. And then you don't want to have one guy at center, right?
Right.
That's available to play. If he gets hurt and rolls up an ankle, then you're screwed, right? That's the only thing I come up with. But even then, it comes back down to Coach B. How do you have you not recruited better and have guys?
Right. Right.
So, yes, Coach B is a guy I'm looking at. But like you said, my bright spot, is the same. It's really, I guess I'm really agreeing with both of those things you said, because the amount of like the freshmen, like, you saw on the field Saturday was absurd. Now my question, like the little bit of darkness I'll give to that, is why aren't some of these guys having what they've been playing more this season? Right.
Right.
Like, I understand Kip. Well, Kip was the best player on defense, for OU, but probably by a good margin. I understand that he's playing behind Stutzman, right? So that's like, I can let that slide. However, at this point, it's like, Kip seems to be knowledgeable enough and seems to fire off well enough that I honestly don't know that he shouldn't be like learning to play in Kanick's spot when Stutzman comes back, because Kanick did not have a good game. And Kanick seems to not play well whenever Stutzman isn't out there.
Yeah, and I think it would be fair to say that from last week to this week, Kanick's got a confidence problem, right? At least that's how I would read it. I don't know. I'm not trying to throw, but I mean, look, man, he got basically pulled last week for Kip, right? Now you're going in a game where Danny Stutzman's not going to be there, and you know the coaching staff's looking at that linebacker room going, somebody has to rise up. The pressure just got heavier. Right. And man, I'm the guy that got benched last week. You know, I think there's a pressure that comes with being BV's guy, right? The guy that BV just wanted, and he wanted BV, you know, that whole thing. I mean, I just saw a guy that was way overthinking everything and just trying too hard to make things happen.
Again, and I've said this all season.
Yes, you have.
Kanick is Danny Stutzman of last year. So I'm not saying to get rid of Kanick and Kanick should start again or anything. Like, I think he should play. I'm just saying he coming next season, he's probably going to have to. I can't see Danny Stutzman coming back, not because I don't think Danny Stutzman doesn't love OU, but Danny Stutzman has been one of the best linebackers in college football. So why do you not test the draft? Unless his great draft grade comes back to a fifth rounder somehow or something for some reason. I don't see that he doesn't go to the NFL, but I digress. Anyway, I think that you have a plethora. We're starting to see the talent level and how much higher it is in the younger and the freshmen and sophomores. Right. And that's really starting to shine through. So,
yeah.
Now I do want to ask one other thing. Now, this is me going off the rails a little bit. And I mentioned this in our Discord or in the Discord we're in. My argument now is here's a hot take, I guess. In my opinion, Dylan Gabriel is not the leader that we thought he was.
Mm.
Now, let me explain my reasoning. I've seen now in two interviews where he basically, again, maybe this is my hatred of Rame pouring out. He's been like, oh no, Rame's great. Rame's really bought in. And it's like, okay, you know, I know you're not going to throw your teammate under the bus, but like, you're really singing the praises of a guy that, you know, nearly screwed the pooch. He just doesn't seem like, in any interview, I don't see like he's a guy that's going to truly call out people. Like, I don't see him as an emotional leader on the sideline, holding people accountable like he should. I don't feel like I see him being a guy that's going to call somebody out and say, you're not doing a good enough job, right? Or really like rah-rah. Like, we've seen him, what we saw two games where he was physical and he showed up for Texas.
He was physical this game. There was that one play where he straight up trucked Martin and only went for a 1 yard gain. But he trucked Martin. Yeah, I think I would push back on that. I mean, is he Baker Mayfield? No. But like, I've seen him on the sidelines pumping guys up and trying to get people together and all the things. Now, his interview demeanor is, I mean, it's everything to be desired. He's just so monotone, talks super slow, like just really just doesn't have personality. But I disagree with that. I think we have seen him. We've seen him chewing wide receivers when they run their routes wrong. Like even last week in the interception with Farouk, he's all into Farouk. And it's not because I think DG knows that ball's not a good ball, but he also knows that Farouk didn't come back hard for the ball either.
Well, okay, let me put it this way. Let me put it a different way. I don't think he's enough of a leader for this offense because I'm not saying he's not a leader at all. I don't think he's a good enough leader because you don't really have anybody else on that offense that's emerged as a leader. I think, honestly, my theory, tinfoil hat, or not really tinfoil hat, but just my theory, Andrell Anthony was the other guy. And Andrell Anthony ain't out there anymore. And you've seen a huge decline since he went out. Since that game he went down, it's been a massive nosedive.
Well, I mean, I just think we've seen it since Texas. I mean, let's not get this twisted. This is where the revisionist history is hilarious, right? SMU, this team was not dominant, right? Cincinnati, this team was not dominant. Against Kansas, you lose, right? I mean, what games outside of Arkansas State and Tulsa has this team been dominant?
I mean, no, that's what I'm saying. I don't disagree.
Like, when you put all that together, like, I just don't know how much more you can really get out of this team. And again, I think this is where we overvalued a team that we were all saying preseason, hey, 9-3, 10-2, right? That's where everybody was. 9-3, 10-2. And then we got on a roll. And I think a lot of people expected us to potentially drop a game there early in the season, and we didn't. I think most of us picked them to lose to Texas, and then they didn't. And it was like, oh, this team is amazing. And it's like, no, like, for instance, another issue that's just been ignored because they've had, like, two good games is the defensive line. And look, the defensive line's not bad. I want to be very clear. But they also get zero pass rush. Zero. I mean, Alan Bowman was not. Now, granted, they schemed some things, lots of quick passes, even their deep balls. It was catch, set your feet, let it fly. It was not stand back there and wait 6 years for him to get way down the field and cut it loose, right? So that eliminates some of your pass rush. But we've been complaining about the pass rush since Arkansas State. We were saying there wasn't a pass rush. So,
well, I mean,
this team is just not uber talented. I don't think that.
Well, here's my thing. What I'm trying to say is, I think everybody thought, and I guess that's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to make this huge indictment that DG isn't the guy and we should get rid of it. I'm not saying that. My point is I think there was a little bit of rose-tinted glasses with him where people thought he was close to a Baker Mayfield, right? Or, you know, Jalen Hurts or whatever as far as his leadership. And I don't think he's that. I don't think he can carry a team on the leadership side of things.
Well, I just disagree. Like, because your argument kind of was like as an example for Andrell Anthony, since he's been gone, it's gone down. No, it's been doing the same. It's just now that you're losing games.
Well, on defense, you could say Billy Bowman's a leader. You could say that Danny Stetson's a leader, right? Like you can circle multiple guys on the defense and say that they're leaders or that they show leadership qualities. My point is on offense.
And the defense has gotten worse all year too. So is their leadership failing?
No. All right. Well, let's just, I don't know.
I mean, that's all.
Look, my point is, like, you're trying to take this to somewhere I'm not trying to take it. My point is you have more leadership on defense, right? You've played better offenses. You played one of the best offenses in UCF. You just played, and I'm sorry. Like, I understand the Alan Bowman thing. I don't think the scheme was great in the passing game. But you also made Ollie Gordon have to rush the ball 30 times to get 100 and something yards when he's busted off nearly 300 yard games, 250 plus yard games the last 2 weeks. So people are saying the defense didn't play good. The defense played fine. I understand the passing game and all that was not good. But again, you've played in UCF and Oklahoma State. You played two great offenses in different ways, right? So I would push back that they've played worse, right? But again, I don't think that there's a good enough. There's the thing is you have the cheap places to go look for leadership in QB, which I think Dylan Gabriel's a leader. I'm just saying I don't know that he's a leader. He needs somebody else to help him. And the other guy you would look to is the quarterback of your offensive line, which is your center, and that's not a leader.
Yeah, McCade Matower is the leader in that room. That's been
and he shouldn't be, right? Like, I mean, right. So
I would agree with that.
So my point is that I'm not on the fire Lebby train. I don't know what you. I don't know. I graded Lebby's play calling a B plus. Again, I don't think it was terrible. I thought there was some moments where I was kind of going, I don't really know that I agree with that. But again, some of that is I think people have to take a step back and go. The Kansas game was terrible. There's no selling that to anybody, right? The Kansas game was terrible. The OSU game, it's like, look, you had Brame have two fumbles, and I understand that those drives specifically, they weren't like knocking on the goal line, but up until those points, you were just moving the ball down the field when you did have it. So that's an issue. Nick Anderson has two uncharacteristic drops. And I would even see we and I talked about this before the pod. DG didn't have a great game. There was two or three plays that I circled where it's hard to see because it's a broad, you know, I had the broadcast view or whatever, but it looks like guys are coming straight up like right across the middle of the field open. I think he had a little bit of that. What we talked about early in the season, not seeing the middle of the field at times. Now, I don't think DG had a terrible game. But I also don't think it was a good game. I think it was a very mid game for him. I would say he got a C+.
Yeah. Well, and again, I don't think his game calling was terrible in this one either. I don't think this was last week was a straight up looked like he never went to the office and created a game plan. This week, they dialed some things up that were there. Like you said, drops. You've got DG lining up, not over center. At one point, like, so everybody's been asking about the snap to Barnes and nobody's ever going to know for sure what was going on there, but whatever it was completely out of sync. And you could tell at the snap of the ball, DG does reach for it as though, oh no, that's supposed to be going to me and I'm standing over the wrong person. You and I pointed out early in the game, second quarter, Jaleel Farouk gets a catch, gets a really nice gain first down. What's Lebby do? He goes tempo, which that's what they do, right? That's their thing. And Jaleel Farouk is screaming at DG in the sideline, like through DG to the sideline, waving his hands everywhere, going, I don't have my play. I don't have my play, waiting for the signals to come to him. And DG snaps the ball and we get a false start penalty or an illegal shift penalty because he's not set. So now Lebby's behind the chains at first and 15, right? And in in negative territory. So you have two plays there where DG just kind of seemed not to be aware. And there was another play later in the day where he almost snapped the ball while guys were still lining up. And I thought we were going to get a penalty. And I mean, it's like, those are like the basic things of quarterback, right? Like when you get under center, even in tempo, you look around and make sure people are set. You've mentioned the snaps by Rame, the drops by Nick Anderson, the drop by Gavin Freeman on a play that's going to go for 4, 5, 6 yards. You continue to have a kicker that you can't trust to make kicks, right? And so, I mean, I feel like if I was a player and I watched this tape, I wouldn't sit there and watch the tape and go, bro, what's our coach doing, right? Which happens sometimes. Like, what were we doing?
Mm-hmm.
But that's a game that you look at and go, dude, we killed ourselves, right? Yeah, we killed ourselves. Like,
but yeah, let me start off by saying, OSU, good on you. You won the game. Like, I'm not trying to take it away. I'm not going to be one of those fans that's like, well, it's because of the Stoops defensive pass interference, even though I've heard zero OSU fans arguing that it wasn't defensive pass interference.
Oh, yeah, no. That was the first thing on my – they were like, dude, that was a better call. I was like, yeah.
Like, literally one of my other friends was texting me, and he was like, dude, I don't know. It was kind of funny, honestly. That was, like, maybe the humor – the most humor-filled part of the game was, well, we go down to our rules analyst to tell us why maybe that wasn't defensive pass interference. He goes, I don't have an answer for you. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I was like just dying. But anyway, yeah, you have a number of things that take points off the board. I know everybody's like, well, you only put up 24 points. And I was like, look, again, this is one of those games where you lost and it sucks. And it stings because you should have won. It really does. And the defense played good enough. I would say the offense even played good enough if you just correct. Like, it's a very small dial of a thing to turn that you win this game.
Right.
Right.
Well, and again, 2 weeks in a row, you lose the turnover battle.
Yeah.
And when you lose the turnover battle, I mean, 99% of the time, it does not go well for you.
Yeah. That's the thing is you look at it and the margin is obviously slim again in a loss. But yeah, like I said, this is one of those games that everybody's like trying to hang Levy out to dry. And I was like, he did a good enough job. He did a good enough job. And I'm not saying the one issue that I take exception with, and this is going to be a little bit wider arching. There's two things really. One, I understand that maybe Drake Stoops is supposed to run that ball a yard deeper on that route. It wasn't a great play call to begin with anyway, but whatever. BV and Levy, I think, in my opinion, is how I view leadership, need to own that and say, look, we made it, like, it was a call. It went the way it went. You know, whatever, like, but don't be like, well, Drake should have run a yard deeper. That to me is not a good show of leadership in that moment. Now, I'm not
But again, and I get it. We all do this, but that's where it's like, you know, just a few minutes ago, we're talking about DG's lack of leadership because he doesn't call guys out like Andrew Rame. But then when there is a play, and I mean, look, it's a fact. If Stoops goes another step forward and cuts out, he's open, and it's a first down. Well, and that's the play design, and that's a fact.
It's the nuance of leadership of saying, you know, we may should have done a better play call. You know, I think Drake should have gone a yard deeper. Like, there's ways to phrase that besides, well, he was supposed to be a yard deeper. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's... But regardless of that, my other issue is going to come back to something we also talked about all season. And this is where I think that we're going to have, like, this is where the real conversation, because I've seen, this is where the Twitter, like, I don't want to be on Twitter today or even yesterday, because I've seen people already calling for BV's head. Everybody's fire Levy right this minute. You know, and I'm like, you can't. Like, this is where I'm going to go on a tirade that I know Troy's going to hate, but if BV's telling us the truth about position coaches, we need to have a conversation about why has there been this rotation? Like, you finally, like, you're in your ninth game of the season and you're just now getting to where you have some sort of solid rotation at running back and offensive line. And you know what I mean? I kept saying it, the whole, my whole argument with the running back room and how it made zero sense was running back sometimes there's gonna be times that you're gonna running back four or five times and he's only gonna have 10 yards after four or five carries. Right? Like that just happened as a running back. And then he busts off a 30 yarder. Like you have to let a running back go throw some body blows against the defense to get rolling. And you got to let them feel that contact and all those sorts of things, whatever other hyperbole type thing you want to say. But you have to do those things. And we haven't done that. It's like you trot out there Marcus Major and he runs three times. Okay. Then you pull him. Then you put Towie in. Then he runs three times. Then you pull him and you put somebody else in. And you're like, what are we doing? What are we doing? And the same thing at offensive line. You go out one series and you do really well. Okay, well, that was great. Now let's, you know, pull Caden Green and we'll put, you know, Sexton in or what, you know, what it's like, what are we doing? We have to establish who's the starting player, who's your secondary player, and go with that. I understand that there might be a little bit of adjustment, but the crazy amounts of rotation we were doing is starting to bite us in the butt, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, we have talked about that. You have to do a better job of managing your talent. There's no doubt. Now, running back, there's some of that I still question, and I have on here. I also think that people keep forgetting that there's an injury bug hitting that room. You know, Barnes can practice. He can go. The doctors are saying he's cleared, but something doesn't feel right in this foot or ankle that he had surgery on. What do you want to do with that? Right? Like, how do you handle that? How do you manage that? Sawchuk has had a hamstring throughout. The downside of the hamstring is you can't do anything, you know? And so like one person I talked to was, look, man, they went like 6 weeks to make sure this thing was healed because he had it last year too. And they wanted to make sure it's fully healed. Well, you're not doing conditioning at all. So you're not going to go into a game plan with a guy that hasn't practiced in 2 months and say, let's give him 25 carries. Like that's not a, and so I'm not saying you're saying this. I'm just saying like, there's all those things. Now, why all of a sudden Daylon Smothers was an option this Saturday when he wasn't, when all these guys were hurt,
where's Caleb Hicks?
Don't understand. Like when you were super thin, why those guys got no run. Right, like we heard that 1 week that Major was hurt, that Towie suspended. I mean, we had all the different things, and you still don't see any of these freshman guys. But now this weekend you did, and again, probably one of my biggest criticisms of Lebby right there. As soon as Daylon Smothers came in the game, it was like they're gonna throw a pass or something to Daylon Smothers. They ain't gonna put him in there to pass pro, right? And sure enough, it was this funky little swing pass to him that got covered and ended up being a sack. It's like, dude, like when you change personnel to somebody that hasn't played all season long and you've got guys that have been running the ball well and Towie, it's like, those are the little plays that it's like, what are you doing? Like, no, if you're going to do that, hand him a straight up run play to say, no, we like this guy running the ball, actually. Like, and we're going to see if we can bust something. And you need to do that a couple times. Then you come to your swing play. Not, oh, hey, you know that swing play that we came up with for Daylon? Let's pull him in now and do it now because everybody's keen to that now. Like, hey, they haven't played this guy all season long. You don't just pull this guy in when everybody's healthy and put him in the game. Like, those little things that just don't make sense. But back to your original, the management of talent, yes, is a pro. Like, again, Savion Byrd is another one. They moved Savion Byrd to right guard, right? Let him play right guard, and Caden Green played left guard. And then as soon as McCade Mattower was healthy, they put Savion Byrd back at left guard when you had found something with Caden Green. Like, McCade Mattower is the one that's hurt. McCade Mattower is the one that's not 100%. McCade Mattower is the one that's been, of the two guards, the most pushed around guard of the two, and you're going to put Savion Byrd back at left guard where you've already played Troy Everett and Caden Green. And so you're going to have three guys playing left guard, but you got nobody to play backup at right. Like, what are we doing?
And again, the only person on the offensive line, I guess Guyton is the other guy, but still, out of the offensive line, the other guys that we're going to be talking about, the only one that's played every snap is Andrew Rain.
Yeah,
that's it. Again, and my thing is, that's what I'm saying. Put Green out there. Green's a freshman. He's going to make mistakes. Look at, if you want to look at somebody else that, and this is where I'm starting to get confused as to, did Bill Beedenbo's philosophy change? Is Venables or is Levy have more hands on that room than we think they do? And it's not being said, because like you had Orlando Brown and what was that, 2015 or 14 or whatever that was, that everybody was clamoring for him to get benched. And they stuck with him because he was a starter and he ended up getting better. But he played through it and he was ended up being a pretty much an All-American talent, right? Like he's one of the best offensive linemen in the NFL right now, right? And you had to do something. And right now it's like you're pulling guys. Like I said, it comes back to that messing with mentality and all that. And then, like I said, how do you do that when you have a guy at center that doesn't appear to care, not playing well, and all that? So, and the other part of my other thing that I want to highlight is BV. Like BV needs to, I think BV needs to have a bigger grasp on the game as a whole. I feel like maybe when it comes to, maybe it's he doesn't see it, maybe it's not, he's not doing it. But there also has to be a time, like we talked about this a little bit. When your defense is as gassed as it was in the first quarter, like your defense was getting pummeled in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Right. BV needs to be the one, I guess, to say, look, Jeff, you need to slow things down. Like, I know you like the up tempo. I'm not telling you not to do a little bit of that, but we need a long sustained drive. We don't need to go score in 45 seconds.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, I think there's a little bit of that too. I think BV owns a little bit of the blame. I'm not saying he needs to get fired or something crazy. But there's just some very, I think there's some very glaring weaknesses that are starting to really become a lot more apparent.
Yeah. But again, I felt like even from a coaching perspective, the only thing that I would complain about in this game from a coaching that I would say that I really, really, really questioned from a coaching perspective is the not taking a timeout to guarantee you get the play that you want. You know, there at the end of the game. Outside of that, I thought things were managed mainly. You know, fourth down and five, I'm a little iffy about going for those there in the fourth quarter like we did in the second half. But again, I understand that your kicker you don't trust, and I don't think any fan trusts. You know, it's a tough deal. But again, for me, as far as an OU side of things, OSU came to play, was the more physical team on Saturday. And then two, you did not make your layups. You didn't make your layups, you know, even early in the game, that first bubble screen pass out there that, I mean, Gentry does exactly what he's supposed to do, takes on the blocker, make sure he covers the edge. I still don't know what Key Lawrence was running to there. Like,
yeah, and Key Lawrence, we haven't even talked about that. But go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish.
It was just that first drive that he had a couple misses in there. But that big play was the biggest one.
He went to the locker room after that. And I never got an answer from anybody. I don't know if it was an injury.
I never got one either.
He didn't come back in the game, but he was on the sidelines in pads. I didn't see if he had his helmet or anything. So it's like, I'm wondering if there wasn't some sort of something else. I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I have no clue. I'm not saying, I talked to somebody. I'm saying it was a weird set of events.
You know, I had forgotten that he went to the locker room early in that game. Maybe it was, but I mean, that's a layup you have to make. 100%. When you've got a guy pinned like that on the sideline, you cannot just let him squirt through and go for 60 yards when there's two guys right there to help bottle him up. That was inexcusable. The drops are inexcusable. The snaps are inexcusable. The false starts for no reason are inexcusable. The not letting your team get lined up before you snap the ball is inexcusable, right? And then when you have all those inexcusables, and then you add on a pass interference call that doesn't get made on a drive that, if it's called, you're going in the end zone for it. Which, by the way, the catch by Drake Stoops on that play, can we just talk about that for half a second?
Yeah.
Like, I understand that his butt was out of bounds. He caught the freaking ball. Like,
yeah, even Brady. Let me actually, I'm going to find this text. It was
Drake unbelievable.
Stoops. Without Drake Stoops, I don't even know what the score would be.
Oh gosh, he was awesome on Saturday.
He just said Drake Stoops is good. He said that dude's really good. And look, I mean, it was. I mean, and I'm not going to say, like, there was some very weird officiating in this game. And I'm not going to be that guy that's like, well, we lost because of officiating. Again, I think they took a touchdown off the board by not calling that. But yes. Again, you should, like we just talked about, there's another probably, I said there's another 10 to 21 points is what I said should probably have been on the board for OU, that OU shot themselves in the foot and nobody helped them do it. So yeah, those things have to get cleaned up. But let me ask this, because I know this is going to be what everybody's talking about. This is the hot topic, and we even talked about Troy. Do you think? I'm thinking about this. Do you think Jeff Lebby should be fired? And if so, when do you think they should fire him?
No, I don't yet. I was just looking it up, by the way. Offensively, for yards, you're the number 7 team in the country, and offensive touchdowns, you're 6th.
Yep, I'm the same.
I mean,
look, let me give you my grand scheme, because this is why I got so hot. Like, I wasn't even hot. This is what's bad. I wasn't hot after the game because of the game. I was mad. I was upset and, you know, annoyed, whatever. I was upset because the Discord we're in, people were literally clamoring for Jeff Lebby to do something. I literally, and you know, you're going to know who I'm going to talk about. I'm not going to throw him under the bus here. Said, run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. You should do nothing but run the ball. Then Jeff Lebby runs the ball 4 times in a row, and he goes, why are you running the ball so much?
Yeah.
Right. Literally within a 5-minute period. I'm like, bro, like, you can't have it both ways. Like,
right.
Jeff Lebby is, there's a number of issues, and Jeff Lebby might right now be part of those issues. Do I think we should fire him? No.
No.
After watching the film again, well, I watched the whole game. I nearly wanted to drink an entire bottle of Jack Daniels watching it, but I watched it. And Jeff Lebby's fine. Some of these issues I think are going to get better with, one, for him having a little bit more experience, right? The Kansas game is inexcusable. Let me start by saying that. This game is not one of those games. Called a great game. Did everything he did, and honestly put his players in a position to succeed. I think the two glaring issues, well, three glaring issues I'm going to highlight that I think could be alleviated maybe at least partially next year. I don't think DG sees the middle of the field well at times. I think there's just times when he just kind of, like, if you go back and watch, there's times where, like, you can see that he reads the middle of the field, but it's like a nanosecond, and he's immediately turning and trying to look for a home run ball, right? Or a check down. So that's an issue. I think maybe hopefully Jackson Arnold's a little better at that. I think having Rame at center is a massive liability right now. I think it's hurting your entire interior offensive line. Went over that. And then third is, we haven't talked about this, the tight end room needs to get better. Like, Stogner, I love you, dude. I really do. I love Stogner. I think he's a great dude. I'm glad that he's back at OU.
Had a big play in this game, in the catch, in the catch side of things.
He did do pretty bad blocking.
Game. Well, early on he did. He kind of got going a little bit better as a game, but man, that first quarter and a half was rough. Rough.
But you, like, who do you have? Like, Blake Smith's probably somewhat of a receiving threat. Not really. You know, I mean, like, you've got to get some talent in the tight end room. And I think because Lebby's offense is predicated on a lot of tight.
Well, and that's the other thing that needs to be talked about here. That's a great segue to Jason Llewellyn during the game. People going, man, how can they be this bad at tight end? And him responding to it in game. Like, I don't. Yeah, that's all he said. Like, so not the worst thing ever, but still. And I know it was deleted like in 10 seconds, but man, like, again, I don't know what the inside, the workings are of who gets to play and who doesn't, but that sounds like a guy that's able to play, wanting to play, and is not being allowed to play. Now, why, I don't know. Right? But That's not a great look.
Well, and I, again, it's hard for me to look at this, and that's why I have this theory that maybe it's a little bit of an indictment on Levy. Maybe it's an indictment of BV. I don't know. Whoever it is, but it's got to be every position group, especially on the offensive side of the ball, I have questions. Like you said, why are we – there's a couple of other guys. The I can't even remember the kid that was the basketball player. Like, maybe he's not any good, but why is he not getting any sort of run? Right? Like, you know, why isn't Blake Smith at least getting a little – why isn't Jason Llewellyn getting some play?
Right.
Right? Like, why are they not? Because, like, as much as I love Stogner, like, we got to have somebody else. And you look at every position group and you can say that. And it's like, so is every position group coach an issue? Or is it more likely, like, let's play Occam's razor here.
Right.
And say that it's, you know, either the offensive coordinator or the head coach. You know, and I'm not, again, I'm not trying to call for anybody's head. I'm just saying, like, there's something there that does not jive. Like, that's not meshing to me.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I we've talked about that ad nauseum, and that's, if there's anything going in the offseason, I think the staff needs to, and I think they've made some adjustments this year. I do think time management has been better this year in game. I think that they've handled those situations better. I do think there have been some times where complimentary football has been better. There have been times where Jeff Lebby has slowed the pace down and allowed the offense to work and given the defense a chance to catch its air after a long drive, right? Which was something that we got really frustrated with last year. That's changed and been better. This year, one of the things that they need to go in the offseason and really discuss among themselves are two major things. One, player management. I understand you have your standards and what people have to do or not do to get on the field. But how does that really mesh with the reality that you know you have a guy or guys that are more talented and you're just choosing not to play them? Like, what needs to be that line? What kind of substituting actually helps those guys get confidence and keeps them engaged as opposed to tinkering too much or not tinkering enough, right? That kind of stuff. And then the second thing is, I think Jeff Lebby needs to go spend some time with somebody that's a great play caller, and he needs to learn the building upon plays, right? We have this play. We know it'll work. It's a great play, but we can also build off of this play, right? Like I was talking about even in the Kansas game. You ran that jet sweep so many times, there's a part of me going, they're about to run a reverse on that. Or they're about to fake that jet sweep and run a wheel route up the sideline and chunk it deep, you know, but like something, or they're going to fake the jet sweep and hit the tight end on the seam or the slot in the seam. And they don't, it's just jet sweep, jet sweep, jet sweep. It's like, do something off of it, build the offense to where, hey, we've sucked that safety down because we keep doing the same thing. Now we're going to hit it. Now we're going to boom. It's going. And that was one of the things, you know, that is one thing we miss from Lincoln Riley. And Teddy used to talk about it. I still remember listening to the radio broadcast Lincoln's last year, and Teddy's just sitting there, and we ended up getting a game, but he's just going, oh, and Toby was like, what'd you see there? And he's like, well, we've had a play. We've been setting it up. That this action we've been doing the whole time has another play off of it where this guy hits the seam, and he did, and he was wide open, but the pressure got to Caleb before he could see it and get the ball to it. You know, like that's the stuff Lincoln did to scheme guys open. And if there is any criticism in all of Jeff Lebby's time, including this game, he doesn't have that. He does not have a build upon play.
Well, and here's the thing. And this is what this is my argument that I made in the Discord to some people today, because everybody's clamoring for Jeff Lebby to be fired. That's pretty much all I see on Twitter. That's all I see in the Discord.
Oh my goodness.
And look, if you're going to separate from Jeff Lebby, you can't do it right now. You know, we talked about this, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it a little bit, but I just want to highlight, like, you can't, honestly, it's like you have to, if you want to do that, unfortunately, because of the situation Lincoln Riley left you in, you don't have the talent capital to do it.
Right.
Like, even if you fire Jeff Lebby at the end of the season, right? Okay. So Jackson Arnold, who's basically said a huge reason why he came to OU was Jeff Lebby. He's gone, most likely. Hawkins probably gone. So now what are you going to do at quarterback? You going to try to go get a portal guy, or you're playing Davis Bedell or General Booty? Right? Like, that's just one position group. You're not talking about Farouk might leave. You're not talking about some of the tight ends might leave. You're not talking about Tatum might not come here. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it could really fall apart. And you're doing that when you're going into the SEC. Like, I'm sorry. Right. Like, I'm not trying to buy into the, like, I'm not trying to justify a sunk cost fallacy. But like you said, the offensive numbers have been, he called a bad Kansas game. He called a bad SMU game. There's no defending it. It needs to get better. Right. But has he been so egregious that you're going to kiss away or burn away all your, potentially all your talent on offense?
Right.
Because of that, I think people are a little too in their emotions. We were riding a high after Texas, and now we've had a very stark crash.
Yeah. Well, and again, I mean, and I don't think we haven't this year. And again, this is where we got sucked into some fool's gold a little bit. The reality that Lincoln Riley not only took the Heisman quarterback, not only did he take one of your receivers that was a good player, not a great player, right? But he gutted the recruiting class. That's what people forget. He gutted the recruiting class that was coming up. So all that massive talent you had coming to OU that had that class as like a top 10, top 8 class, he shifted them all to USC right before signing day because that's when he left. So again, the D-line is not talented enough right now. The offensive line's not talented enough right now. I would even venture as though they have been one of the best units on the team. Wide receiver still needs some more talent, right? Like right now, you have two true speedsters on the entire team. Andrew Anthony, Brent Thompson, that's it. Now we think Jacquez Petaway, but we don't play him very much, but we'll see. So you're thin there. You have one tight end you feel comfortable playing, right? Because all the rest left. So again, think about next year. And again, we've talked about this the other day. When you think about even next year, Nigel Smith, David Stone, Jaden Jackson, Wyatt Gilmore, right? To go with R. Mason Thomas, PJ Adebare, Grayson Halton, Kelvin Gilliam, right? I think there's a little more talent there, right? A healthy Josiah Wagner, a healthy Gentry Williams, a healthy Makari Vickers, so forth, so on, a healthy Peyton Bowen, a healthy Kip Lewis. Like,
the defense has me drooling. But yeah. I think people look over the offense. Like Jackson Arnold, I know we haven't seen. We have a very small sample size. The dude looks like the future right now. I know that's a lot to say when he hasn't played any meaningful time this season, right?
Yeah.
But Jackson Arnold looks like that dude.
Yeah.
Tatum looks like an incredible talent. Like you said, Petaway is another guy you highlighted. Has looked like he's got that. He's got that move that you just can't coach. Right. You know, and then you look at some of like Caleb Hicks is a guy we've heard nothing good about, even though he hasn't sniffed the field really. Smothers is another guy that you've seen, like you've heard some good things about. Like you have some good things and you have some good things coming in. I can't remember what's the tight end name kid. He reclassified.
Devon Mitchell.
You have some of those guys coming in. It's like you're finally starting to regain that capital that you lost. I use the word, you know, capital, whatever, but you're starting to regain some of what got gutted from you.
And so, I mean, I say all that to say, too, those things hamper Jeff Lebby and what he can call.
Right.
When you don't trust the offensive line to do certain things, but it's a part of what you want to do offensively, how do you build off those things? How do you get to those things? How do you make those things happen? And I do think there's a little bit of that taking place, both defensively and offensively. And so, look, everything has moved in the right direction for the most part. Like Lebby's recruited his butt off. Can't deny that. He's got Kevin Speary in the boat. He's got Michael Hawkins in the boat. He's got JFA in the boat. I mean, they're in supposedly on one of the highest ranked quarterbacks a year after Kevin Speary comes in.
Like, I mean,
You just got to build the line.
And I would say this. I would say while the offense still needs work, I think DG and I think DG's improved a lot, immensely from last year.
Yes.
There was one ball where I saw him revert to what we talked about last year, where he tries to throw a 900 mile an hour fastball.
Yes.
And it just sails.
Yeah.
He did that once, a stoop throw
towards the end zone.
Yeah. And he did that and he corrected it. Right. He went back. His deep ball is better, a lot better than it was last year. It's still not elite. We can't expect it to be elite. He doesn't have that kind of arm. But it's better. Like I said, I would say he's done some to develop Dylan.
Right? Oh, major.
I would say that he's done some stuff to develop some of the receivers. I say Farouk's having a better year. I know Farouk didn't have a great game Saturday, but overall in the season, when you look at him, it's like he looks like a more reliable target. Because even last year, coming into this season, people forget, like, people were talking about Farouk not even playing hardly, or him getting overshadowed by people, right? I don't agree with firing Levy. I know Troy's probably not going to, he probably doesn't care what I think, but Troy, I know you did disagree.
There's a lot
me.
Of people on that train, but again, they also wanted to fire offensive coordinators that had set NCAA records for points scored in a season, right?
Well, and that's been my point is I made this argument earlier. I know stats aren't everything, but you're still one of the top offenses in college football.
Here's where it gets tricky, and we're not there yet with this offense. What gets tricky is when guys have great track records, but then that track record doesn't match a 2 or 3 year run, right? Now, last year, there were moments still in last season where the offense was eh, but most of us would say Dylan Gabriel, if we're honest, didn't execute. Like what most of the fan base said was, Dylan Gabriel can't hit an inside throw. Dylan Gabriel can't see the middle of the field. Dylan Gabriel overthrows everybody. If you hit the guys that you're overthrowing, you're a 9-win team, right? That was a narrative. So that's not a Levy problem. That's a DG problem, right? And so you have that, but now it's better. So it all, like, here's a great example. And this is what I'm a little bit of afraid of with Beatenbo. Jackie Shipp. Go back to the years when Jackie Shipp was the defensive tackle coach. Dude brought in monsters, brought in Tommy Harris, right? Brought in Gerald McCoy, all those guys. And then it came out that when he was supposed to be out recruiting, he wasn't out recruiting. And all of a sudden, the recruiting took a massive dip for 2 or 3 years. And all of a sudden, OU's defense started to decline because they didn't have the big hosses in the middle that they used to have because Jackie Shipp had the – you could look at Jackie Shipp's career and go, dude, he brought in this first rounder, this first rounder, this first rounder. And then all of a sudden it dropped massively. It's because he wasn't recruiting. Now, I'm not saying that any of those things are true of Bill Beatenbo, but he's the one guy right now that has a resume that you would go, how in the world could you ever get rid of this guy? But when you really look at the tail end now, the last 4 years or so, it has not been what it was his first 6, 7, 8 years.
Well, let me give you where I'm going to agree with you, but then disagree a little bit. I'm not on the fire. Well, I agree with you that Bill Beatenbo needs to be looked at. Like he's
that's
weak.
All I'm saying. Yeah,
he's I'm not on the fire him yet, but he needs a strong look. And honestly, if at some point in this season we don't see somebody else play center, or we don't see a solid, some other guys that have established themselves at the other positions, as much as you've rotated every other position on the offensive line, then I'm going to be a lot closer to firing Bill Beatenbo. And if you miss on some of the recruits that you got coming in, but regardless of that, let's say
that's the tricky part, right? So on the Levy train, he's had 2 seasons and both times it's performed well. Let's see what happens. You don't start looking to the fire train until there's a long, track record of things not performing like they should, right? And based off the talent and based off what they've had, I think Jeff Levy's done fine. Enough to keep his job.
Here's something I want to highlight, and I want to go on to the next thing that we're going to talk about, I think. We don't have a flow, so I'm guessing. But the other thing is people need to stop looking for the reason to fire Levy. Okay, this play didn't work. Great. you still had, like, everybody was like, why are we running the ball? You know why you're running the ball? Because at that point in the game, Gavin Sochuk was averaging over 10 yards a carry.
Yeah.
And Towie Walker was averaging over 10 yards a carry. And you're trying to rest your defense. So him running the ball four times in a row actually doesn't bother me that much.
Right. Right.
You know, so it's like, but you're going, oh, well, we didn't get any points. Okay. But when you look at it as the scope of the whole game, it makes perfect sense. Right. Like that's anyway, that's it. That is what it is. So,
yeah.
But do you know, have somebody who's going to have a lot of time to figure out some of their schemes and stuff?
I think you're referencing USC.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It finally happened about 4 years too late.
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't know, obviously USC lost again, third loss, now to Washington by 10, gave up 52 points to Washington, and it was announced today that Alex Grinch will no longer be the defensive coordinator, that he has been released from USC, and that Brian Odom, former Sooner, apparently will be the interim DC. Now, the only thing that scares me about that is Brian's going to keep running the same system. Feels like that's why they would promote him to DC over some other guys that have been at USC for a while in other capacities. But I'm super excited for Brian. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Super excited.
A former Ada Cougar too.
Ada Cougar as well. Teammate of mine.
Hey, we've 4 yards in a cloud of dust, baby.
Hey, me and Brian have got the same state ring from his freshman year. So
yeah, anyway. Always hold that over my head. No, look, I mean, I'm happy for Brian. It's the whole thing that happened Saturday was for USC, and today has just been wild to watch. One, did you see Lincoln didn't bring out the players with him initially to do interviews. They had interviewed them separately. I don't know. You saw the Caleb Williams thing too, right? Where he was in the stands and all that.
Crying with his mom. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't hate Caleb. I think it's a weird thing to do it right there. I will say that. Right. But it's like, also everybody piling on and laughing. I'm like, dude, like, look, the kid wants to win. I feel bad for him. And if anything, instead of roasting Caleb Williams, how about we roast Lincoln Riley, that Lincoln Riley emotionally broke one of the most talented college football quarterbacks we've seen in however many years. Is it not a fair point? Tell me it's not a fair point.
It is a fair point. I mean, we've been talking about, and look, you can't have it both ways. Everybody went nuts on Emmanuel Acho when he said Caleb should shut it down for the year.
Yeah.
And not even play any more quarterback and just go to the NFL. And everybody's like, that's terrible. Blah, blah, you know, well, here's the kid playing when he knows he most likely can't get to the Pac-12 championship. He definitely can't win a national championship. And he's crying over losing another game. And we're all making fun of him. I did it first too. And I thought it was a little awkward, but at least like you said, the dude wants to win. And he's out there playing when he could have packed it in and said, I'll take my NIL money and I'm running for the NFL. You guys have fun. And he did it.
Here's my thing with it. Here's my outlook on it. I never really made fun of him for it. I thought it was, like I said, I thought it was weird. I thought his interview, I don't know if you saw his interview after the game that they finally did with him. It was a little weird. You can just tell that he's just exhausted emotionally.
Yeah.
You know, and understandable. Like, they went from, you know, top of the heap or whatever to now they're not even going to sniff the Pac-12 championship.
Yeah.
You know, so I get it. But my take on it again is Lincoln Riley has, like, I don't see how he's going to have any success moving forward. I know you talked about if he finds a good DC, but the problem right now is, like, he's going to have to find a hell of a DC, and he's going to have to find a way to make his overall team physical.
Yeah.
No good defensive coordinator is going to come in there and say, I don't want my guys to, I want them to play two below when we're in practice.
Right. And but I think when they see what Benny Wiley does for strength and conditioning, they're not going to be on board with that either.
Yeah. I mean,
so
just
lots
say,
of problems there. Lots of problems there.
Still cheering for Caleb. I know that may be an unpopular opinion. I still like the kid. It sucks what happened, and I'm cheering for him as much as I can while cheering that USC loses, and there's a good chance they lose a lot more.
Well, the other one that I'm not cheering for is Jimbo Fisher, who lost another. And I am just ecstatic.
Did you see the Jackson Dart?
Yes, I did. If you don't know what we're talking about, Jackson Dart, apparently social media wise, lots of A&M defensive linemen kind of
throwing shade.
I don't know. Is trolling the right word? Throwing shade, yeah. Whatever, towards Ole Miss. And then they pull it out and win the game. And he basically said, I guess they get a lot of attention or don't get enough attention with all those games they lose over there. So it is a pretty cold shot by Jackson Dart. But big win for Ole Miss, man. They're sitting in a great position, good win. And it's just going to be, again, another squad. What's going to happen? What will happen to them in the midst of all that?
Well, let's just talk about it real quick, because they are, I don't even know what is their record right now.
I believe that's their third loss or fourth. No, fourth loss.
I think they're 5-4. They'll probably get bowl eligible.
Yeah, which is their goal.
Yeah, that's their fourth loss. So they're right now, they are 5-4, which they do have Abilene Christian left on their schedule. So probably going to get bowl eligible.
There you go.
But they do play Mississippi State, who's not been great, but who knows with Texas A&M. And they play LSU, who's probably going to not be able to stop them, but also put up 100 points. So, yeah, there's a good chance that they end up 6-6 going into bowl season. With, by the way, the most blue chips, like, ever or whatever it is. But
yeah, something dumb. It's up there. I mean, again, highest rated recruiting class in history. We know that much. I still think Georgia's got them on the most blue chips ever, but regardless, man, that's a roster that can't be 5-4, right? Like, that's all it is. It's what it is. Speaking of wins and losses, I do want to bring this back up because we talked about this last week. OSU is sitting in the driver's seat right now for the Big 12 championship game. That's facts, right? Their remaining games are UCF, who, by the way, still can move the ball and still has a good offense. So we'll see what happens in that game against their defense. Houston shouldn't be a problem. And BYU, I think that'll be a really close slugfest, right, of a game for OSU. Texas, I don't know if you can say should have lost to Kansas State, but, man, I'm still shocked.
Yeah, they shot themselves in the foot a lot.
A lot. They have TCU, Iowa State, who, by the way, is a lot like OSU. Iowa State's just gotten better. As the year has gone along, they're getting better and better and better. So that will be a tough game. And then they finish out with Tech to close the year, which I don't think will be a problem. All that to say, if Texas drops one of those, just one, OU's right back in the and OU's in the driver's seat.
There would be nothing that would make me happier. OU's got a lot of work to do to get there. But if OU runs the table and it's OU OSU in the Big 12 championship, do you understand how happy I would be?
Oh, man, it'd be amazing. It'd be amazing to try to get a second shot at them. So, we need help. Let's not get it twisted. We need help. But I do think it's possible. OU still has to go out and take care of business and handle all the things that they need to handle. But they have a chance. But they've got to play great football. West Virginia's defense is good. West Virginia's defense is good, which means most likely this will be a tight game again. You got to play good, clean football. BYU, you got to go on the road and play good, clean football. TCU, good, clean football.
When TCU
you do that, you're going to be there.
TCU is also a Friday game, which adds that like weirdness to it, right?
Short
like,
week, Good Friday, or not Good Friday, Black Friday. Whatever that is, all that good stuff. It's going to be interesting. But look, there's still a lot in front of this Oklahoma team. They still have a shot at a conference championship, and they cannot lose sight of that. I love the way Billy Bowman post game reacted to all that, those things. This one hurts, man. It's frustrating. But again, I'm not freaking out. I think we have seen through the course of this year, this team is not great. This team's not even SEC ready. But they're better. They are better.
Well,
and to play a lot of young talent. Let's keep moving forward.
Yeah, I was going to say the silver lining to all this. Again, everybody needs to calm down. in my opinion, and everybody needs to get out of their feelings a little bit about the coaching staff. You know, nobody needs to be left in whatever city they're in because of the performance, right? And yeah, like I said, you have a lot of young talent. Even on the offensive side of the ball, we can highlight the defense. The defensive side of the ball is by far the much stronger part of this team. I don't think we can argue that right now.
Right. Right.
Especially talent-wise. But you got some guys coming in that could be really good. And like I said, I don't know how you feel about him. I know you like him. But Jackson Arnold, I think, is I really want to see. I'm willing to give Lebby a chance to have Jackson Arnold, because really people keep saying, well, it'll be his first year. It's like, no, it'll be his second year at OU. So
yeah,
I understand it'll be his first year as a starter, full-time starter, whatever. Give him a little run. If he's the guy we think he is and Lebby can't make that work, then let's have that conversation.
Correct.
Correct. As much as we might like DG, he has limitations. We have to admit that.
Totally agree. Totally agree with you 100%. So, well, as you can see, I'm starting to fade. I'm falling apart. I'm done talking about this crap. I'm ready to move on and start looking at some West Virginia tape.
I'm just kidding.
and move that direction. Look, man, left too much on the plate. I mean, that's just all there is to it. You left too much on the table to win the game for me. Sure, coaches had issues, all the different things, but this just comes down to players having to execute. You got to run your routes the right distance. You got to catch the ball when it comes to you. You got to make tackles when they come to you. All those things. When you don't do that, you give another team an opportunity, and we did. And then we gave them just one opportunity too many, and they stole the game right out from underneath us and played a cleaner game than we did, and therefore they earned it as well. So that's all I've got. Again, please like, subscribe, follow, leave a 5-star review and comment. I'm Daryl. That's Jared. We're having a great time talking about all this stuff, even when it sucks. And we hope you are too. And we will talk to you guys later.
Bye, Baker.
Cha-ching, a Thunder Money Ball.
You can unhitch the wagon. Put the ponies in the ball.